This means that Donald Trump will be the 45th president of the United States.
This is your life now. This is our election now. This is us. This is our country. It's real.
Hi, and welcome back to the 45th. This is our final episode for this year, 2019. And I am excited that for this final episode, it's not just me and Susan, but we've got Wajahat on as well. Hey, Waj.
Hey, historic day, historic day.
Big day, yeah. Hey, Susan.
Hey.
So, it is the morning of the impeachment vote. Is that what's happening?
That is what's happening. I like you have to ask because you're a mother of three and you're like, oh yeah, there's that impeachment thing happening.
Yeah. Now look, I know it's happening. I'm just like, although I did just see something, I did just see a little presser where House Republicans are asking for an adjournment or something. I saw it briefly and
they'll
I said,
be doing
I don't know
that all day.
Okay. They'll be doing yes. that all day.
I mean, the projections were going to be that like the final vote would be about 5-6 hours after it started, so maybe around like 4 today. That's not going to happen. They're going to do as many bogus, drawn out whatevers they can think of to try and push us as late as possible.
That's
so
right.
It wouldn't surprise me if we're going towards like 9 or 10 p.m. before the final vote.
Oh, yeah, God. All right. And
yeah, they were expecting 6:30 or 7:30 last night, but I agree.
I think 10 o'clock is a safe estimate, and that could be wrong.
I hope all the House Democrats have a lot of hydration and protein to get them through the day because they're going to need it. Can we start with the letter that Trump sent to Nancy Pelosi yesterday?
Can we call it a letter? It's more like an extended tweet.
It's a really long tweet.
Yes.
It's like the combination of all the tweets in a way.
Yes.
It's a rage rant. I was just kind of openly musing about this, but I was on CNN last night and Lemon said this on air. I just pictured him behind the desk watching television. I assumed someone came on that pissed him off. And then he's like, Stephen, come here right now. He gets Stephen Miller and he goes, record this. And he just rants for like 10 minutes. And apparently his attorney, Cipollone, got at the last second. And that's why you see some like finessed language. And that was like the third or fourth draft. So what we got was like the edited draft. Can you imagine the first draft?
I don't think Cipollone did much to it because they posted like two versions of it, like in the final one. And the only difference between like the final and the one before that seems to be the one Cipollone got, is that they changed like the title from, it was Speaker Pelosi and they changed it to Madam Speaker as the salutation.
Well, there's no way some of this language came from Trump. I mean, like
indelible, indelible. No, he doesn't use the word indelible.
I mean, you know, the articles of impeachment introduced by the House Judiciary are not recognizable under any standard of constitutional theory, interpretation of or jurisprudence. There's no way.
Well, what's funny is he got a couple aides to help him write it, and one of them is a childhood friend of mine.
No,
yeah, and like we used to play video games together. I'm like, this is how our life paths diverged.
Did he
try to
reach
out to that friend?
Yeah, did he try to kill you in the video games? You know, like
no, we actually teamed up. We usually were like on a team together against our little siblings.
Wow. No, but it's stunning, right? It gives you an insight. I mean, we laugh about it, and we should, especially if you pick some choice quotes. But I said this yesterday, and I stand by it. I read that letter in the voice of, like, Saddam Hussein or Gaddafi, but, like, the caricature of Saddam. Remember, like, Saddam at the trial? Like, how dare you? You have no authority over me. It's like an authoritarian, like a man-child, a narcissist who's raging against the world, like this perpetual victimhood.
This is the dude who tweeted about his like great and infinite wisdom. So it's not particularly different from the past. It's longer than the past screeds. I'll give him that. But in terms of content, it's pretty much, you know, average.
It's who he is. It's exactly.
There's nothing in there new that we haven't heard before, right? It's all the same stuff. It's all the same. There's lies, misdirection, just total, you know, bullshit. But I'm wondering, what do you think the purpose of it was? I mean, like, there's no way he's not going to convince.
Rage.
Pelosi's not going to get this letter. Just rage, just sheer impotent rage.
Sheer
that this is the one,
rage.
Yeah, that he cannot stop this one thing that's happening. I mean, I think today's going to be a nightmare for him.
He's already tweeting like crazy. Exactly. It's rage and anger that this is happening to him.
What's kind of funny, though, is that, like, if he, theoretically, the best way he could handle this politically is to do kind of what Lindsey Graham and McConnell are trying to do, which is just to dismiss it all as meaningless. And he would be, theoretically, pretty good at that. It's, I mean, it's not, wouldn't be great for anyone in the Constitution, but, like, he could get away with this by just acting as if, oh, it's no big deal, it's fake anyway, it's, I don't recognize this. But he can't. He's physically incapable of acting that way.
He can't because he's not used to being held accountable.
That's right.
And this is what's happening now. And he cannot, he can't stomach it. He just can't deal with it.
Even for the political benefit, he can't just fake it. He just has to be whining and raging the whole time.
And you know, also what he said was, because there's a tweet and comment for everything. When Bill Clinton was getting impeached 20 years ago, he said, if I was ever impeached, foreshadowing, I would attack everyone. Because he comes from, again, the Roy Cohn and Roger Stone school, right? You deny, 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 attack, attack, attack. And so it's both rage and impotence and narcissism and insecurity, but also this is the only mode he knows. Like, everything he sees is red and he must attack everyone. Whereas if he was wise, he would just stay out of it, promote some of the good stuff that he's trying to do, I guess, the trade deal, maybe the China deal, if it goes through, probably won't. But it's like an impulsive child. It's like, you know, he'll always eat the cookie. In those experiments, remember, like, how
yes.
how long will the child wait? He will always eat the cookie.
Yeah, immediately. I do want to, I mean, I know, you know, impeachment is the order of the day, but there are some things, I mean, like you said, as all this is ongoing, he continues to, you said, do some good things, but also do some major damage. I want to talk about a couple of those stories before we wrap up today. But getting back to this for now, the vote's going to take place at some, and you know, I mean, wasn't it not long ago when the GOP was demanding that they just put this to a vote already and stop with the like, and now that the vote is happening, am I imagining that? That did happen,
they've,
right?
They've had all positions at various points.
They've taken every position. Okay, possible.
Yeah.
So I want to talk a little bit about how things are already looking like they're going to go down in the Senate. We had Chuck Schumer make some demands of Mitch McConnell a couple of days ago. He wants to call witnesses. He wants to have Michael Bolton. And who else was it?
Well, he wants lots of witnesses. The question is if we have witnesses at all, though. Because right now what seems to be the game plan, at least the ideal game plan in terms of McConnell and Graham, is as soon as this impeachment vote comes through from the House, the Senate would just dismiss it outright.
Right.
Like, just be done with it. If they had the votes for it, which but they I,
but
might.
But didn't McConnell say that he would take this to trial?
Yeah, but he was bluffing. They don't want this to the trial. They know there's nothing that can help Trump at a trial here, and they know that. Trump is delusional and thinks that he can be vindicated or somehow have innocence proven. McConnell is not an idiot in any way. Like, that is not one of his flaws. He knows that's not what's going to happen if you put evidence on. And he also knows that there aren't enough votes in the Senate to call, like, to make it a dog and pony show and to call up, like, Schiff and the whistleblower and Hunter Biden like they want to. So they're not going to be able to get that, most likely. And they know that calling witnesses in general will be bad for Trump, so they just want to make it go away instantly. And he may have the votes for it. He's kind of, it's not clear what the signal is there, but I think I would not be surprised if we found out that even tomorrow they'd already dismissed it. I think it's less likely than other options, but it's certainly on the table.
And he telegraphs it like a James Bond villain. He tells you exactly what he's going to do. Like, him and Lindsey Graham are openly like, they're openly saying our minds made up, we're biased. It's like the jury foreman and the judge openly working with the defense counsel and then putting on the trial.
Well, it's also they're openly trying to persuade a dumbass defendant because Trump wants to have this whole thing and they know that he doesn't need it. So they're part of their public statements are designed to get him on board with what he needs to do. It's not just for the public.
But it's so shameless also because, you know, you have to take a separate oath right before the impeachment trial. And that oath is to be impartial. And they literally are like, F you oath. And we're literally going to go against our oath. And like Susan said, there's a strategy here because the facts have him, like, he's damned. Like, the facts are completely against Trump. And if you put anyone up there, Mulvaney, Pence, Perry, Bolton, he's effed. And they know it. So it is in the Republican interest to kind of do this and get this over with as quickly as possible. At the same time, though, going back to the letter and going back to the narcissism and just going back to how Trump operates, he still will not feel truly vindicated. Like, this is the same guy who is still litigating the 2016 election,
right?
Which he won, Right. And so, right. Do you think this asterisk next to his name, like, do you think he'll let live this down? He won't. It's impossible. he cannot let this live this down, that he now joins Clinton and Johnson, most likely, as one of the only three presidents in our nation's history to be impeached.
And he'll whine on Twitter about it a lot. But the thing is, the ideal scenario here for the Republicans depends on them having the votes for it. Do they have 51? Maybe. But guaranteed? No.
To dismiss it?
Dismiss it outright.
Okay.
Because you've got, I mean, just the same way that there are certain Democrats in the House who might be harmed, and a few probably will be harmed by this, there are some vulnerable senators who don't want to be seen as a straight up, you know, in on it, cozying up to Trump, dismissing impeachment without even, like, considering witnesses. So there could be four that he doesn't have on board, in which case we may have a trial, but then it could possibly just be opening statements and no more. Whether there's four senators who will demand witnesses or not remains to be seen.
We could name them, though, right? So this is
the strategy. I think there'd be something to surprise you. I don't even think the ones that we name off the bat are realistic. Like Collins, come on, who cares? She'll do what she's not going to do anything. She's theoretically on the list, but she's not on the list. One of the biggest problems with clothes is that, like, you can't just have one set that works all the time. Unfortunately, it is now winter, so all my cute summer clothes from Stitch Fix that I got, not quite going to cut the bill for, you know, from now until May. Luckily, Stitch Fix is there whenever you need it. Stitch Fix is an online stylist that can give you the outfits you need for any season. And if you need some cute coats like I do right now, Stitch Fix is the place to go.
Oh, they've got some really cute winter stuff. And yeah, it's definitely time for a Stitch Fix update for you and for me. They also have all the brands that we all know and love and exclusive styles that you don't find anywhere else. And one of my favorite things about using Stitch Fix, because obviously I cannot afford a real life stylist, is the fact that they have real people on the other end who are like, you know what, we think you should try this out. So they send you pieces that you're like, I would never, ever, ever on my own try that out. That's because I'm not a stylist. I don't know what I'm doing, but they know what they're doing.
Yeah. And plus the stuff that, like, you never personally have done before and you're like, okay, I know this is in style now, but, like, I don't know what I'm doing with it. I don't trust my judgment here. And they're like, just wear this. It's fine. And you put it on. You're like, oh, yeah, I should have been wearing that all along.
And it's not just for the ladies. Brothers, you need Stitch Fix. Many of you do.
Dudes need it way more than we do.
For real. Right. So Stitch Fix has solutions for women, men, and kids all over the U.S. And by the way, now the U.K. too.
And with no subscription required, pick between automatic shipments or only getting new pieces on demand. Shipping, exchanges, and returns always free. And plus, the $20 styling fee is automatically applied towards anything you keep from your box. So discover new styles and find unique pieces with Stitch Fix.
Get started today at stitchfix.com/45th and get an extra 25% off when you keep everything in your box. That's stitchfix.com/45th. Once again, stitchfix.com/45th.
I just think because there's a Republican right-wing infrastructure, right? A lot of these people are thinking about life after office. So I'll give you one example. Will Hurd. Will Hurd is a smart guy. He was CIA. He's retiring from the House.
But he wants to run in 2024.
That's what I'm saying. There's a very incestuous right-wing infrastructure where they depend on each other. And if you're seen as not being loyal to Trump, right, these people go into, like, the, you know, they go into lobbying, they go into you know, law firms, they go sit on boards, and they are thinking about their future after Trump. So I wouldn't be surprised if McConnell whips up the votes. And Collins, I'm glad you mentioned her. She's a vulnerable senator, one of, like, several: Gardner, Tillis, McSally, Ernst, Collins. She might actually retire. She hasn't made a decision yet. She's apparently going to make a decision.
I think she announced.
She announced already?
Yeah, pretty sure. Yeah, she did.
That she's retiring?
No, that she's running.
Oh, she's running. Okay.
Yeah, she was definitely not retiring.
Okay, so like, my thing is, I don't see it. Like, I would not be surprised if they go all in for Trump.
So the ones who are, I think, the best bets for, not saying vote to impeach, but the ones who may vote to have an actual trial, are the ones like Collins. I don't have any faith in Collins, whatever. But other ones who want to, they're not retiring, they're not planning to go into the machine at, like, being a consultant, they want to be reelected and are vulnerable. Those are the ones whose votes might be gettable.
But either way, if I'm a Democrat, you have to take McConnell and Graham seriously. Like, again, like the James Bond villain, they just gave you the entire plot. OK, so now what you're going to do is, you know, he's going to get acquitted in the Senate. You know, what you do is you take public sentiment, right? Because a poll came out yesterday which said that 71% of Americans and a majority of Republicans, like a high 60% of Republicans, want Trump's aides to come and testify. You hang this around their neck going up to 2020 and you go after these vulnerable Republicans. And like I've said this before on the podcast, go after the White House, increase your presence in the House and take the Senate.
Another possible strategy that I have read the House is considering is to hold the impeachment articles and not send them to the Senate until they come to some kind of resolution on like the rules, how the Senate trial is going to be. And I don't know how that would operate.
Don't get that lot. I've seen those arguments. I don't understand what they're trying to say. I don't think there's a textual basis for it. I mean, I don't see the point. It makes no sense to me.
Well, you could drag it out. You could drag it out and put pressure, public pressure.
No, you can't drag it out, though. But there's no authority to, like, once you've impeached him, he's impeached. It goes to the Senate.
Once a vote is taken, maybe there's some mechanism by which that then has to be kind of transferred to the Senate. And they're like, we're just not going to do it. We're not going to pull that switch.
You could just, the realistic answer is that what you do, what you have to do. Like, you say, like, if he does more stuff, you impeach him again. Because what other choice do you have? I mean, the thing is, we're now in a stage where he will probably be acquitted, barring some amazing merit, like barring something wacky happening, he'll be acquitted. And the question is, going forward, will there be any checks left on him? I'm firmly in the camp they had to go ahead and do this. There's no choice at this point. But once he's acquitted, Democrats are maybe likely to be squishy on having the willingness to go through with it again. So the next time he does something awful, what's the remedy? At the same time, I do think it does have a deterrent effect, because Trump is Trump. So there is, I think, value in doing this, and that he will be less likely to be so blatant or so deeply impeachable in the future to try and avoid this.
But what if, and this is a complete possibility, is that we just learn about stuff he's already done? You know, the whistleblower came forward. I mean, like, it could be that in the last couple of years he's done other, I mean, of course he has. He's committed other impeachable offenses that are hard to avoid. But maybe that at that point, you know, they're like, we're going to have to let this play out in the election.
The question is political will. Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of anything crazy coming out, Giuliani, is he back?
He's back. Shokin died twice.
He's giving interviews.
Can we talk about this?
Yes. Can we talk about this?
All right. So
Shokin died twice.
Shokin died twice because he was poisoned. He was revived. Is he saying Biden poisoned Shokin? Is that what he's saying?
Yes.
Okay.
And I'm sorry, I'm not voting for any American vice president or president or any, like, even cabinet official that cannot succeed in assassinating some like prosecutor in a foreign country. I'm sorry, that is just poor work.
Yeah, because at least Ted Cruz's dad, you know, helped kill JFK. Like, that happened. Like,
I'm successful at it. The fact Biden failed at this is really a mark against him. But I'm not kidding. I have like probably 10 times a day now since this happened. I just suddenly had the thought Shokin died twice, and I crack up every goddamn time. Yeah. Shokin, by the way, is the chief prosecutor. Shokin's the one who was prosecutor for less a year, if that, in Ukraine, and was forced out because the international community could see how corrupt he was. He refused to investigate. He refused to do any. I think he didn't bring a single corruption case. He was essentially getting paid off by all the companies and people before they could get actually tried. So he's the one that Biden was.
As vice president.
As vice president was the one that he help force out, and that Trump and Giuliani are now claiming that Biden forced him out because he was investigating his son. No, not true. Like, first of all, just to go over this again, first of all, the acts that should have been investigated and tried from Burisma, the company, happened before Hunter Biden joined the board. So Hunter Biden came on after when they joined. They also had like a former Republican from the States. They had the Polish president, former president. They had a laundry list of like, you know, worldwide big names, whatever, connections. But all the acts that Burisma was being investigated for occurred before Biden came on. Right. So it's not even like he was involved.
And Giuliani, as he's giving these interviews, he keeps referring to these dates and times, not realizing this is before Hunter Biden joined the board. So Giuliani has conducted his investigation. He's come back. And apparently there's a phone conversation as soon as he landed. Trump was like, what do you got? He's like, I have so much stuff. You know, you can't even believe it.
Shokin died three times.
Not just twice, three times. And so I did read...
Joe killed them and Obama killed them.
Yes.
Three times he died.
I mean, is what he's trying to say, he couldn't, Biden was having trouble removing him, so he tried to kill him, or that he found stuff that could implicate Hunter, so he tried to kill him?
Well, so what I saw from some of the interviews, because OANN or whatever it's called, that stupid, like, Fox on steroids show, they had their mockumentary they made when filming over in Europe with Giuliani. And they were kind of unclear on the whole like poisoning thing, but it seems like it happened recently. And part of the reason why they had to go to Ukraine to interview Shokin is that he was so sick from these poisonings he couldn't travel. So this is a recent poisoning, to clarify.
Okay.
Yes.
You know, real quick, I mean, just before I forget, the breaking news that Manafort's fraud case in New York got dismissed. Yeah. So it's up the possibility for a pardon. Just happened right now.
Okay. Yeah. And Manafort had a heart attack, right, a couple of days ago.
Yeah, cardiac event. Hospitalized for that.
Yeah, I have no idea what a cardiac event is, but there you go. It was an amazing cardiac event. But you know, the reason why Giuliani is doing this is he has an audience of one, which is Trump. And it's actually successful because he's like, what are you going to do to me? F you. I got Trump and the Republicans behind me. They got my back. He's openly admitting to all this stuff. Nothing's going to happen to him yet. And once you sully the waters, that's the main thing. You spread conspiracy theories and you just confuse people. You flood the zone. And now people are like, oh, I had someone just randomly tell me, didn't Hunter do something? And like Joe did something. And I'm just confused. That's the purpose. Right. So he's successful. Right.
Yeah.
There is the audience of one thing, but I do think a lot of this is continuing to muddy the waters. I mean, I just saw a video clip this morning. I think it was taken from Trevor Noah's show, where one of his correspondents is going out and he's speaking to Trump supporters and he's saying, you know, they're saying, well, just read the transcript, which is just what Trump says over and over. Read the transcript, the phone call. And he asked them, have you read the transcript? None of them read the transcript because they're like, no, we have people we trust who have read the transcript. And they're telling us X, Y, Z. So, but the other thing is this, I do think what you said earlier about this whole impeachment thing is going to go away. He'll get acquitted or it'll be dismissed. But Trump is not going to let this go. And I think he's going to continue to make Giuliani and Barr and the rest of them like just hunt down whatever he can to try and prosecute Biden or try to do something. I mean, he's not going to let this go.
He won't, but Giuliani is not going to be part of the deal for much longer, I don't think. I think that his usefulness is long overplayed. He knows where bad things are for Trump, so that's why he's still around. Kind of like Mulvaney, he's kind of hard to get rid of at the moment, but it's like Cohen. It won't be that hard at the point where it's necessary for Trump to totally toss him under the bridge because the Republicans want him to do that. They're sick of Giuliani. They don't want what Giuliani is doing. Like, they don't want his distractions. They don't want his nonsense. They know it's crazy. They know it's
Trump
weird.
Doesn't care what the Republicans want. I mean, Trump just doesn't care. And as long as Giuliani is making himself useful.
But is he making himself useful? Because it actually isn't that useful. The stuff he's finding is more, I think, more damaging to Trump politically than it is useful overall.
Okay.
Like, the thing is, God, it's going to be really obnoxious when, after Trump is acquitted, we suddenly have the Giuliani case come into life and we find out all the surveillance they had on Parnas and Fruman, and it proves like Trump's involvement in a massive illegal LNG bribery scheme. But we know that the case is still going on. Well, they probably haven't indicted Giuliani because of the impeachment that's pending. But once that's over, I think he is done for because there's so much evidence of his involvement there. And we know they started investigating in February or sooner. The latest they could have started is February. So it's been going on for a long time. And we had some drama this week in Parnas's case. Love Parnas because the government sought to revoke his bail because he's out in house arrest right now because he apparently lied about his finances. And his wife got a $1 million, quote, loan from Ukrainian oligarch Firtash in September 2019, recently.
Wow.
And I mean, basically, it's very clear that Firtash is the one who's been bankrolling Parnas and Fruman, and through them, Giuliani. Mm. And we know that the counterintelligence investigation from the FBI that was going on, at least in February, if not sooner, had to do with looking into Firtash's manipulation of Giuliani to get influence in the White House.
So this past Sunday was my father's 79th birthday. And, you know, it's hard to figure out what to give the man who has, like, every sweater in the world, but it's always cold, and every tech gadget. But this year, it was, like, the perfect gift. I got him an Ember Wave. So, Susan, you and I have both been using the Ember Wave for the last year. And I mean, honestly, like, for somebody who always has, like, issues with a personal temperature, too hot, too cold, it's just the perfect gift. And my father was so excited. First of all, I got him a Fitbit last year. So this year he's just like, I'm going to wear this on my other wrist. And he can't believe something like this exists because it's just some crazy kooky technology.
It is. I still don't know how it works, but don't need to because it does work. It is. I don't use a Fitbit. That's too much work for me. But the Ember Wave is the greatest way to deal with being a super finicky temperature person. And if you know someone else who is obnoxious about temperature like I am, The Ember Wave is a fantastic go-to GIF.
Well, look, a lot of us end up being like in common spaces, like we're in an office that's freezing, we're in a computer lab that's like 1,000 degrees hot, whatever, and you can't like regulate your own temperature. What the Ember Wave does, it's like this personal little heating or cooling unit. And the way apparently it works, it's like, for example, if you're really, really cold, you come in out, you know, from out of the cold, and you put your hands around a hot cup of tea, or you warm your hands under some water. It works with the same theory that you just have to heat up certain points in your body to make your whole body feel comfortable.
Ember Wave was named one of Time Magazine's best inventions of 2018 and has been reviewed by a number of leading technical publications, including Wired, Fast Company, and GMA.
And why shouldn't it be? It was invented by 3 MIT scientists, and they won the pitch for the AARP's Innovation in Aging Award that was given live on Good Morning America, and my dad is also an AARP member, so it worked out perfectly.
And listeners get $50 off for the holidays if they go to emberwave.com/45th. That's emberwave.com/45th.
So my mother's birthday is next month. And by the way, she's getting one too. It's a good thing she doesn't listen to the show.
You got to tip your hat off to Putin.
Fertesh is different. That's not quite. I mean, it's so yes. Saying,
but I mean, they just look at the level of corruption, the disinformation.
But you don't need Putin for that. This is like a typical oligarch scheme they got going on. And he's been running the scam for a long time.
Garden variety oligarch scheme.
Well, it's a little more complicated than normal, but it's not. I don't think you need to see Putin in this one.
You know, there was an interesting Twitter thread, or I don't know if it was a tweet, by national security expert Malcolm Nance. And I know people have all kinds of opinions about him, but he does have a whole range of experience on these issues. Where he talks about the way Giuliani operates, I mean, the potential for Russia to use this as an opportunity to dangle all kinds of disinformation, lies, you know, just fake dossiers, you know, just create evidence of things that didn't actually happen. And Giuliani's going to suck it up, bring it back to the States, spew it out to Trump, and just continue to confuse the electorate and manipulate this president. You know, when it comes to Giuliani, what I don't understand is this. Trump, I just think, is stupid. I really think Trump is very low IQ or something. Yes. Giuliani, I never expected that. Is this all self-serving, basically, to protect himself, to protect his, you know, all the money he's been making, all the schemes he's got going on? Or is he really this stupid as well?
No, he's not stupid. He's crazy like a fox sometimes. And he's definitely declined.
Crazy like a fox.
He's definitely declined from his previous ability. Like, I think there is something going on. And his wife has even said as much, or his ex-wife, that like there's something, like, it's not just like senility. She says he had a bad fall, and after that he was never the same, and just more aggressive and lunatic. But that aside, Giuliani is not stupid. He has made it more difficult than it should have been to, I think, prosecute him for some of the offenses he's making, because he's trying to walk a thin line by, you know, dodging one statute by, you know, diving into another, and it's going to catch up with him. But the Farah stuff, I think he's definitely screwed up there. But you can see in the way he's structured things and the way he's operated, he's aware of possible issues of liability, and he's tried to avoid it. He's better than Cohen in that respect. But Giuliani's problem is that he just loves money and attention. So
And I feel like he's going to be like herpes for Trump. He's not going to go away quiet, because he has the ego. And he, remember that, like, just a couple of weeks ago was on Fox News, where he necessarily wasn't really threatening, but he was just like saying, hey, if you throw me under the bus, I got the goods, right? So he's not going to allow the Republican Party to get rid of him. It, like, reminds me, I was watching The Irishman on Netflix. It reminds me of, like, Al Pacino's characterization of Hoffa. Like, you know, they can't get rid of me. And if they do, you know, I've got stuff on them.
But how'd that work out for Hoffa?
So Hoffa went down. But guess what? I mean, I don't want to spoil the movie, but him going down also affected everybody else. I feel like he's going to be one of those types of guys. And this is, you know, Robbie, you were mentioning this, the disinformation, the Bill Barr, like, traveling around Europe on his crazy, you know, scheme, using taxpayer dollars to prove that it was Ukraine and not Russia. We know for a fact the October surprise, or maybe the September surprise, whoever the Democratic candidate is, I don't care if it's Biden, Buttigieg, Warren, or Sanders, with Bill Barr there, you know they're going to attack him. You know, they're like, you know the MO. This is what's going to happen. And the fact is that he has Bill Barr there as his AG, which is so terrifying, willing to throw his own Justice Department, the Inspector General, under the bus, pursuing this lame-brained, half-assed, completely kooky, false conspiracy theory that only helps Russia. Just connecting the dots, Trump is not going to let this go, which in a weird way might actually help Democrats, because it will show Trump to be more and more reckless. And I still feel like more and more people might actually come out now. There might be more leaks. More people might like come out, like give some information.
I think that in that respect, the Republicans have won. They have shown civil government workforce what consequences lie if turn a whistleblower. They've made it very clear that it's not going to be fun. You're probably not going to be successful in doing whatever you want to do to fix your agency, and it's going to be a disaster for you professionally. So I think that they have actually won that battle.
All you need is a few. Like, you just need one or two. That's it. Like, drip, drip, drip. Because just a few people coming out give strength and confidence to others to come out. Like, you know, Fiona Hill, Yovanovitch.
Okay, what have you seen from the past, like, couple months of the impeachment proceedings that would give you comfort to be a whistleblower?
None. But what I'm saying is the fact that people have come out and they've been praised and adulated, and the fact
and
that
had their careers ruined.
Sure, I know. But I'm just banking on a few patriots, just a few. That's all I'm saying. A couple of them come out, because the majority of people, even though they're, you know, the reputation ruined, conspiracy theories, anti-Semitic conspiracy theories, security detail, the works, we got it. We know what's happening with Vindman, for example. Nonetheless, they're still praised by the majority as heroes. And there's something about courage, seeing someone survive it, that probably gives courage to a few people. And we're in D.C. We know this. We know Republicans.
See, the thing is, none of them actually came forward, though, the way that, like, they didn't have a way to come forward. They did what they could internally. It meant nothing. Reporting it internally did jack shit, because guess what? People you're reporting to made sure to kill it. It was a unique circumstances that led to the CIA. Well, the whistleblower was not in the normal White House chain of command. He had protections from the Whistleblower Act that, you know, Vindman, for instance, would not have been able to invoke. But I don't think anyone, I mean, people, I'm undoubtedly people in the administration or in anywhere in the federal government are reporting things that are happening that are wrong. Mm-hmm. And they probably don't even have the full picture about what's going on or Trump's involvement. But that does not mean we're going to hear about it or that they're going to have other outlets to bring it forward.
If I was in that position, I would be less concerned about my reputation, my career, if I thought my coming forward would actually have an impact. And I feel like what really would de-incentivize anybody for coming forward and being that patriot is that what they're seeing is that it's not making a difference. We know Trump is going to be acquitted. What has it achieved at the end of the day? Nothing. Supreme Court's in his pocket. Like, what do we? So I think that I can see people sacrificing themselves in their careers if they think it's really going to make a change. I just don't think it's going to happen here.
This is where I'm the rare optimist. I just feel that this administration is so incompetent.
But they've been that way for 3 years now.
No, I know, but it adds up. It's so dangerous. And plus, he is actually going to be impeached. Yes, he'll get acquitted, but he will be impeached. And we've said this before, 10, 11 months to 2020 elections in Trump years is like 4 years. He will, because he's so talented, mashallah, as Muslims say, he will F up in a grand way. Yeah. Like, 11 months is plenty of time for him to do more and more stupid things. A few people will be like, I'm willing to risk my career and my life for the sake of the country. I just feel like you just need two or three. And
I disagree entirely. What we're in is like a massive systemic breakdown of our democracy and of our civil service. And a few people like that won't make a difference. A few good cogs in the machine don't change the machine.
What I think is going to make the difference is actually nothing that's going to happen inside the Beltway. I think what's going to make the difference are stories like the one that said that, you know, that we know he's cutting food stamps for millions and millions of people. It's, you know, farmers whose subsidies are still not helping them survive. Their farms are going to go under no matter what because of his trade wars. I think those are the things that are going to sink him at this point.
The Medicaid too, the Puerto Rico, who can't vote anyway.
Right.
Yeah, and so I just want to clarify. I'm not saying that these guys will be haymakers that'll knock them out flat. I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that it'll be two or three that'll come out and save the day. I'm saying it'll chip away. All this stuff will, in exactly everything that you and Rabia mentioned, it will chip away at a vulnerable president where 50% of the population, according to both the Fox News and CNN News, wants him impeached and removed. I mean, that's like a stunning number. That's the number.
Yeah, and you know, they reported it on Fox, and they were shocked at it themselves. And I'm sure Trump apparently was pretty upset that they did.
For me, the only thing we can do is do our best to preserve a free-ish election. That is our own. For me, that is the single most important goal for the next year.
And that is one thing I was thinking about that, you know, on one hand, yeah, all of this can and does chip away at Trump. It distracts from him. You know, it takes away his time and energy and resources. But also, how much of this is doing the same to our efforts to protect the next election, all the upcoming elections. I mean, I worry about all of this happening. And in the meantime, Russia's like, we have lot, you know, any kind of foreign actors, like we have lots of time and space. Nobody's paying attention. We can mess stuff up while these people are distracted doing other things.
Well, not just that. Voter suppression. Look what happened in Wisconsin. The judge allowed the purge of 200,000 voters. And same thing in Georgia. And Wisconsin, the election is going to come down to Wisconsin, by the way. Wisconsin, for those of you who have been following, has been a laboratory for Republicans on how to rig an election with suppression and gerrymandering. And Trump won it by 22,000 votes. Well, 200,000 are getting purged. They're appealing it. Same thing with Georgia. And there's the Democratic debate this week. And, you know, what I tweeted this, and I hope to God finally the Dems tackle this. They should be like a 10-minute segment on what are we doing to combat voter suppression. So I say everything that I said, knowing, Ravia, that there's going to be foreign interference, that there will be disinformation, that there will be voter suppression. The reason why I keep saying chip, 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 chip away is because if we can have free-ish elections, if we can just get enough people to come out and vote, and this is where I think when you chip away at Trump with all of this chaos, the impeachment, the scandals, the Giulianis, a couple of whistleblowers, women in particular, guys, women are disgusted with Trump. Like, so 50% want him impeached and removed. You know what the number is for women? 61%. And I think that's why you chip, chip, chip away with all these factors. Maybe you just get enough people to give you the Electoral College and he goes away.
Okay, look, his numbers don't change. He has that base. A few might be pulled off, but the chipping is overall not going to be effective with this guy. He's already unpopular. In a fair election, he'd already lose. I think that's the surest way.
I feel like, you know, he plasters up those chips by doing what he did last week, which was like, you know, trying to court the Jewish vote with this new executive order. And I know why you have to leave soon, but I did want to talk about that with you for a little bit. Can we talk about this executive order and what it means? And so, you know, the context of this really is to suppress BDS activism on college campuses. And for those folks, because some of us live in this microcosm where you like live and die by BDS, but many people have no idea what it is. So, Wajahat, if you want to explain to our listeners.
Sure, sure. So boycott, divestment, and sanctions is a nonviolent movement, if you will, more than a decade old, created by Palestinian activists asking the international community, modeled upon the South African model, to boycott, divest, and sanction Israel, specifically for its treatment of Palestinians and the occupation. And, you know,
and the expanding of settlements,
Expanding of settlements. They want the end of the occupation. They want equality. They want the right of return for refugees. And it has been growing, especially on college campuses. There's been intersection of different activists, different ethnicities, different groups, but coming together, realizing, okay, violence is not working, so we'll try a nonviolent mode. The levers of power in this country have really tried to crush it, and that's what's really disturbing. And I'm glad you mentioned this. A lot of people are asking, okay, well, did they make Jews into a nationality? And wow, this is like even more terrifying for Jews. But the impetus is to crush any sort of protest or advocacy for Palestinian self-determination and equality and the end of occupation. And the funny thing is all those First Amendment free speech warriors are perfectly fine with the curtailment of free speech on college campuses to advocate for BDS. But you framed it correctly. It is mainly to court the right-wing base, not even Jews, but evangelical Christians. Sure. The largest pro-Israel group in America are these evangelical Christians. And the move to the embassy in Jerusalem was for evangelical Christians. All of this is predominantly for evangelical Christians in America who believe that Jews have to control Jerusalem in order for the rapture to happen. And then, of course, Muslims and Jews are going to die first. Awesome.
Yeah. It's just worth noting that there was some confusion over the story, and it's not clear yet what happened. But the New York Times, the night before the executive order came out, reported that it was going to define Jewishness is the nationality to somehow affect existing regulations for, like, basically how campuses can operate and get federal money. And then when the executive order came out, it didn't actually do that. It's I don't know if it was ever definitely answered, if the New York Times got the story wrong or if the order was changed after the story came out and there was the outcry. What it does, so obviously it would be disturbing as heck to have a executive order declare Jewishness to be a nationality. But it does seem like whatever was the plan, it was to tap into existing Department of Education regulations to shut down BDS. And they just needed a way to do it, essentially.
Right. Those regulations basically prevent discrimination against certain groups. And so this order is supposed to define, and it's actually still not clear whether he's using the order to define Jewishness as a nationality and minority race, but they're trying to squeeze Jewish American population. But the disingenuousness of this is this, that on campuses, many of the activities that are like BDS activities are often, in fact, headed up by Jewish activists. Jewish students are very heavily involved as BDS activists. And so you have people on both sides of this issue that are Jewish. So for him to equate American Jewishness with pro is, you see what I'm saying? Like, that's the problematic leap here, where American Jews are like, why are you pulling us into this when this is like, this is an issue about foreign policy? What you're saying is all American Jews align behind Israeli policy, and we're Israelis and we're not Americans.
Well, I mean, this is in line with what Trump has already said, right? Because Trump,
right, he has.
Couple months ago, that
called Jews bad Jews. He's like,
he said American Jews, if we're Democrats, are disloyal. And they're like, what do you mean disloyal? They're disloyal to Israel. And they're like, wait, we're American. And then the defenders came out on TV, like, oh, that's not what he meant. And then they asked him, he goes, no, that's what I meant. So the president of the United States of America is literally saying that 75-80% of Jews are quote unquote disloyal, which is a horrible anti-Semitic trope. He's also openly told Republican Jews, I don't need your money. He said that Israel is your country. They've promoted the Soros conspiracy theory. Literally, you have a pro-Zionist, anti-Semitic president. That's what's happening right now. Sit with that for a second. Let it marinate.
But I have always thought of many of these evangelical groups that are Zionist groups, very hardline Zionist groups, are in fact anti-Semitic, because at the end of the day, they just really want all the Jews to die with the second coming of Christ. So,
and they're also a strong, part of it is like they're not against Jews having their own country. They like the idea of having like an evangelical country be the U.S. So to them, mm-hmm. it's fine to have a country. They're not opposed to like a Jewish state existing. They like that idea. They just want them to have their own state and us evangelicals over here to have our own.
Like, what you said, just to give it a little bit more detail, you're absolutely right about the evangelicals, because the two people that he had that he invited from America to... to give blessings at the opening of the embassy in Jerusalem were Robert Jeffress and Pastor Hagee, two Christian evangelical leaders, and both of those leaders have said anti-Semitic comments in the past. Jeffress said that like Jews are going to hell. So just for the audience.
And also at the announcement of the executive order, at the signing of the executive order, right? Was it Jeffress there or Hagee? One of these pastors was there, horribly anti-Semitic. But the purpose of this order is basically to withhold federal funding for universities and colleges that allow this. Now, I remember not too long ago, there was also some interference at Duke University with, I think, their Middle Eastern program. The administration, DeVos's Department of Education, interfered there, saying it was too pro-Arab or something. I mean, it's...
It was biased. It was biased in its depiction, and it wanted like a more balanced, nuanced conversation in the Middle East. Apparently, it was too anti-Israel. That's chilling also. Apparently, the withholding of funds from an academic institute are kind of like forcing professors to, well, first of all, I would say change history and change facts, but also to be quote unquote balanced and, pro-Israel. Well, what does that mean? What's the standard? Like, how do you become pro-Israel, right?
Political interference in academic spaces is really deeply problematic anyways. I mean, like, those are spaces where the students, the teachers, the professors, the academics, the intellectuals, like, that's their ground to debate and decide on their own without any kind of governmental interference about what's appropriate, not appropriate. But back to the whole point, this is all, again, him courting voters.
His most loyal base is about 70-80% of white evangelical Christians who are with him. Chosen one. That's what Franklin Graham said, right? He's the chosen one. And so they're going to be with him, and he's trying to just shore up that base before 2020. And we're going to see more and more of these just cynical, naked overtures in the next 10 to 11 months. Even like the pardon. Remember the pardon of Eddie Gallagher?
If Trump gets his way, Eddie Gallagher is going to be campaigning with him. We'll see how that rolls out.
I'm sure he would. It's already been teased out. Why wouldn't he?
Because I don't, it's clear no one, like, even his own people don't want that. So they may win on that one.
I agree. McConnell might step in and say, yo.
Yeah, like.
Be that adult.
Thing is, like, Republicans, when they put their foot down and want their way with Trump, they usually get it. Like, what Trump does is because Republicans either want it or don't care enough to stop it or just, like, don't care really about it one way or another. But Trump has rarely done things that actually are in opposition to the Republican Party. He's not actually just running amok doing his own thing and they're falling behind. If they want to stop him, they can. They do sometimes.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Mujahid, and we will have you back in the new year.
2020.
Have a wonderful, have a happy holidays. Have a great new year, and we'll see you in 2020.
See you on the other side.
See you.
Yep.
Thanks for having me on, as always.
So, Susan, has anything transpired in the last hour that we need to cover before wrapping this up?
I would not know. I have been,
let me just check Trump's Twitter account. That's always important to do.
He's been tweeting so much. I just don't even read the tweets anymore. They mean nothing.
I mean, he's breaking records every day, hundreds and hundreds. I think my favorite tweet of the last week, however, was his head on Rocky's body. Was that in the last week? I think it was. Okay, let's see. He just retweeted a prayer. Yeah, it's just a tweet shitstorm. All right. There's nothing new, though. It's the same old sample. Any other stories we need to touch on?
Susan? Yeah, well, I think, you know, this today, it will be almost certainly the impeachment vote. It'll go forward. We have to wait and see what's going to happen with the Senate. And if McConnell gets his way, then this will be the end of the story for now, or at least the end of its significant effect on Trump, I think. But it is frustrating. There's so much left for us to learn about what's happening in Ukraine with this whole affair, that unless Mulvaney and Bolton, I mean, even if it's just them, I'd take it, testify, we're not going to get the full story. On the other hand, you know what? The full story doesn't matter. Does the full story, is that, does that actually change any minds?
Right.
Probably not. Like me personally, as someone who like likes to know everything, yeah, I want to know it. And it is frustrating we don't have it right now. Right. But realistically, it's not as if they'd suddenly have one witness come in and be like, oh, I have changed my mind. I mean, Mulvaney's already announced there was a quid pro quo, and they just pretend he didn't. So I don't see how that would change under oath.
No, I don't think it would change any minds at all, but it would put more information out there for the public to maybe change their minds. And I think that could also, you know, that's important. Why was Bolton not called as a witness in the House?
He was initially, and then he said he was not going to appear unless he got litigated, and Democrats were like, we're not waiting till theoretically 16 months from now to do this. We're just going ahead. So, well, assuming this happens today, which I think will probably still happen before midnight, Trump will be the third president in history to be impeached.
Hey, happy holidays. Merry Christmas, everybody. Merry impeachment. There's got to be a better word for that. Impeachment.
Merry impeachment. Impeachment.
Impeachment. It's a merry impeachment. Yeah. All right, Susan. So whatever happens in the Senate, it's going to happen in the new year anyways, right? So I guess we have a little bit of downtime.
Yeah. Yep. Oh, Trump wanted them to go to the trial right away. And McConnell was like, no, which, you know, thank you, McConnell. That's probably good for all of us.
Yeah, yeah. And we need to sleep just for a little bit. All right. Okay. Well, to all of our listeners, from everybody at the 45th, thank you so much for being with us all year. And we will keep dragging
through
it.
Back in 2020.
Back in until we have to change it to the 46th, and then we'll see what happens. But for now, it's not going anywhere. But happy holidays. Merry Christmas. Happy Hanukkah. There's a war on nothing as far as I'm concerned. Happy Kwanzaa. And a very happy new year to all of you. We'll be back, in 3 weeks?
See you then.
Back in 3 weeks. All right. Bye-bye.
A big thanks to all our listeners for tuning in to the 45th podcast week after week. And if you'd like to give us further support, you can do that by becoming a patron at patreon.com/45thpod. By doing so, you can become a supporter and patron for as little as $5 a month. And to do so, again, go to patreon.com/45thpod. A shout out and thank you to our sponsors. They make this program possible. And I urge our listeners to please check out our sponsors and use their products. And thank you to them for helping us produce week after after week. Thank you to our audio producer, Hannah McCarthy, our executive producer, Meethal Thelhan, and you can find us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Our handle is at 45th Pod. Our website is www.45thpod.com. Thanks again for tuning in. See you next week.